Good evening. This is the Pacifica Evening News special holiday broadcast. I'm your host, Lauren Schmidt. Tonight, we bring you part two of our year in review, highlighting the stories KPFA News covered at home and abroad throughout 2025. If you missed part one, you can find it in our archives at kpfa.org. 2025 was a year that tested democracy, reshaped global power, and compelled communities into the streets. From the return of Donald Trump and the policies that followed, to multiple wars, mass protest, climate catastrophe, and historic firsts. Tonight, we look back through the reporting of our news team, the voices we amplified, the moments that mattered, and the forces that defined the year. We pick up where we left off in last night's broadcast, in the spring of 2025, and continue tracing the moments that shaped the year, the consequences still unfolding, and the stories that will carry into the new year. Buckle up and stay tuned. In the beginning of April, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made the first of what would become five visits to the White House, as Trump hinted at a new ceasefire, while also floating the idea of U.S. ownership of Gaza. Christopher Martinez reported on the visit.
Trump raised his idea of sending Palestinians out of Gaza and turning the territory into what he called the Riviera of the Middle East. Despite the controversy that has generated, Trump has not given up on the idea.
Well, you know how I feel about the Gaza Strip. I think it's an incredible piece of important real estate, and I think it's something that we would be involved in, but, you know, having a peace force like the United States there, controlling and owning the Gaza Strip would be a good thing. Because right now, all it is for years and years, all I hear about is killing and Hamas and problems. And if you take the people, the Palestinians, and move them around to different countries, and you have plenty of countries that will do that, and you really have a freedom zone. You call it the freedom zone, a free zone, a zone where people aren't going to be killed every day. That's a hell of a place.
Prime Minister Netanyahu seemed to agree.
And what is wrong with giving people a choice? Now, we've been talking, including over lunch, about some countries are... won't go into them right now. They're saying, you know, if Gazans want to leave, we want to take them in. And I think this is the right thing to do. If you give, you know, it's going to take years to rebuild Gaza. In the meantime, people can have an option. The president has a vision. Countries are responding to that vision. We're working on it. I hope we'll have good news for you.
At the United Nations, Secretary General Antonio Guterres appealed to world leaders to pressure Israel to allow aid into Gaza, as the number of humanitarian workers killed surpassed 400.
No food, no fuel, no medicine, no commercial supplies. As aid has dried up, the floodgates of horror have reopened. Gaza is a killing field, and civilians are in an endless death loop.
April also saw another wave of mass protests. Hands-off demonstrations swept through the Bay Area, with rallies in San Francisco and Oakland, targeting Musk, Doge, and Trump-era policies, calling for solidarity and people-powered resistance to authoritarianism.
We want this moment to be a massive flex, showing the powers that be and all of the institutions that are caving that the people are the last bulwark against tyranny. And so we want them to know that hundreds of thousands of people rallied all across the country, in some countries in around the world. And we also want everybody who came here to get linked up to an organization and start organizing. And so we just bring more people in, build more power, and that's the only way that we can topple an autocratic regime.
Later in April, Trump announced a partial pause on tariffs, excluding China, prompting Democrats to say the economic damage was already done and uncertainty remained. The repeated threats and reversals earned Trump a new nickname, Taco, short for Trump Always Chickens Out. Democratic lawmakers also urged the SEC to investigate whether Trump engaged in market manipulation to benefit himself and allies. In May, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez launched their Fighting Oligarchy Tour, stopping in one of California's most conservative districts, Bakersfield.
It's a place where oil and agriculture dominate the economy, and some 5,000 Valley residents crammed in and around the Dignity Health Convention Center for Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's the hottest political act in the country right now. The event had a working-class theme. Nicole Moore is president of Rideshare Drivers United. She told about the reality of working in the tech world, what she calls the belly of the beast.
We are the future of work. And we can tell you as it is now, it is not freedom. It's a trap. But make no mistake, this isn't just about drivers. This is a new playbook. They're coming for nurses, for teachers, for everyone, because everyone can be managed and deployed by an app. And if so, maybe they can get rid of your rights too.
AOC focused on the Republicans' Project 2025 agenda, pointing the message at a local congressman for this region.
Just look at what Republicans have been quietly doing in Congress, including your congressman out here, Representative Valadao. They've been voting to advance cuts on hundreds of billions of dollars from Medicaid and veterans benefits so that they can take that money and give it to billionaires in the form of tax cuts and sweetheart government contracts to their companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin.
She concluded with a message of hope for a better country that embraces living wages, stable housing, guaranteed health care, and dignity for all people. Then she introduced a man who has been promoting those values throughout his long political career, and Bernie Sanders made his case.
You got millions and millions of people are working for starvation wages. People cannot afford housing. People cannot afford the prescription drugs they need. People want to buy good food for their kids. They go into a grocery store, price of the food is off the charts.
Sanders stated that 800,000 Americans are homeless and 20 million Americans are spending 50% or more of their limited incomes on housing. He suggested cutting military spending and building more affordable housing. Vic Bedoyan reporting for KPFA News and KFCF Radio.
Harvard University became the first major institution to challenge the Trump administration's demands aimed at regulating higher education. Former President Barack Obama weighed in, saying he hoped other institutions would follow suit. California also became the first state to sue the Trump administration over tariffs, with Governor Gavin Newsom blasting what he called smash-mouth capitalism in your face.
I mean, from free capitalism to crony capitalism, just like that. Corruption? This is the personification of corruption.
In the East Bay, former Congressmember Barbara Lee was sworn in as Oakland's first black female mayor, pledging to stand up to the Trump administration.
I was in Congress 4 years with Donald Trump, and there are several things. One, we've got to make sure that Oakland stands strong and resists some of these policies that would really traumatize and be wrong for our immigrant community. And I hope that we stay unified in pushing back and resisting. And as mayor, I'm going to make sure that we don't allow the Trump administration to divide and conquer this community.
The start of May also brought turmoil in Washington. Trump nominated Mike Waltz as UN ambassador after removing him as national security advisor following the Signal chat scandal. That same week, the House voted to block California's vehicle pollution standards, including the state's 2035 phase-out of gas-powered cars. overseas, a Freedom Flotilla ship attempting to deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza was attacked by drones.
Activists aboard the vessel called the Conscience reported two drone strikes shortly after midnight local time as their boat was in international waters off of Malta. The strikes caused a fire aboard the ship. Some crew members suffered minor injuries putting out the blaze. The ship was carrying 12 crew members and 4 civilians, but dozens more international activists had assembled in Malta to join the flotilla and head to Gaza. One of them is the Swedish activist Greta Thunberg.
For 2 months now, not a single bottle of water has entered Gaza, and it's a systematic starvation of 2 million people. What happens now is uncertain, but what is certain is that us human rights activists will continue to do everything in our power to do our part to demand a free Palestine and demand the opening of a humanitarian corridor.
I'm Eileen Alfandari for KPFA News.
Following the attack, protesters gathered outside the Israeli consulate in San Francisco, condemning the drone strike on the humanitarian aid boat bound for Gaza. In the spring, Democrats began pushing back, especially after ICE arrested Newark Mayor Ross Baraka.
Their message and their warning is that if it can happen to the mayor of the largest city in New Jersey, it can happen to anybody. The mayor in question is Newark Mayor Ross Baraka. He's challenged the reopening of the detention center for not having required permits, and he's a vocal opponent of the Trump administration's immigrant detention and deportation policies. He says they're not actually arresting criminals and gang members.
They're arresting people with green cards, and they're arresting people who have student visas. They're arresting DACA students and individuals who disagree with them politically. This is what they're doing. They can't fill up that Delaney Hall with folks that are gang members because those people don't exist. They're going to fill it up with your neighbors and your relatives and your friends who are trying to be citizens in the United States, and they're going to call them illegal because they didn't finish the process.
By the end of May, the House passed Trump's so-called Big Beautiful Bill, delivering major tax breaks for the wealthy while cutting safety net programs. Trump then hosted a private dinner for top investors in the Trump meme coin, which Democrats called a, quote, orgy of corruption, close quote, and a national security threat.
The name of the meme coin begins with a dollar sign, followed by the name Trump. Democratic lawmakers and government ethics advocates are not amused. Democrat Sam Liccardo is a congressmember from California.
Today at the Trump National Golf Club, we have the opportunity to see corruption at its finest. We have all long suspected, but now we know for certain, that this president is coin operated, both literally and figuratively.
Liccardo was speaking at a news conference held by Democratic lawmakers and government ethics advocates. Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts calls the meme coin dinner an orgy of corruption.
We are here today to talk about exactly one topic, corruption. Corruption in its ugliest form. Donald Trump is using the presidency of the United States to make himself richer through crypto. And he's doing it right out there in plain sight. He is signaling to anyone who wants to ask for a special favor and is willing to pay for it exactly how to do that.
As spring came to a close, Trump bid farewell to Elon Musk in the Oval Office as the Doge leader returned to the private sector.
This is not the end of Doge, but really the beginning. The Doge team will only grow stronger over time. The Doge influence will only grow stronger. I liken it to a sort of Buddhism. It's like a way of life.
The Big Beautiful Bill soon faced backlash, even from some Republicans and Musk himself, as Democrats warned it weakened the courts. 2S LGBTQIA plus veterans joined State Senator Scott Wiener to protest the renaming of the naval ship USNS Harvey Milk.
Veterans worked for years to secure the naming of a naval vessel for our hero, Harvey Milk. And what Trump and Hegseth are doing, it is despicable, and it is part of their campaign to erase all LGBTQ people from public life.
June marked a major escalation as Trump mobilized the California National Guard to suppress immigrant rights protests in Los Angeles.
Simmering tensions are boiling over as communities watch their friends, family, neighbors, and employees get swept up in President Donald Trump's mass deportation agenda. So when federal agents made another raid on immigrants Friday, arresting some 44 people in L.A., they were met with protests.
Free them all! Free them all! Free them all!
Video shows police throwing flash bangs to disperse a crowd as demonstrators chanted, "Set them free, let them stay," and "ICE out of L.A." People blocked streets and a car was set on fire. It's unclear how. In response, President Donald Trump called in the National Guard, the first time in 60 years a president has commandeered the National Guard without a governor's request. Governor Gavin Newsom and Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass advised against the move, saying it would escalate tensions. And it did, as thousands of protesters hit the streets Sunday, shutting down highways, some engaging in property destruction. Two cars were set on fire, including a CHP SUV and an autonomous vehicle. Again, federal agents deploying tear gas and flash bang grenades. Federal agents also fired on an Australian TV news reporter. Sunday, Mayor Bass said Trump was escalating and causing chaos.
What we're seeing in LA is chaos caused by the administration.
The move sparked outrage from state and local leaders, unions, and Democrats, and prompted a lawsuit. In the Bay Area, San Francisco police arrested over 150 people at an immigration solidarity rally, including a KPFA reporter.
Fight back!
Stand up!
Fight back!
Stand up!
Fight!
Nobody's being violent here. We're just standing.
We had a solidarity with LA rally,
and
it ended by being kettled and arrested by San Francisco Police Department.
Trump then sent additional National Guard troops and U.S. Marines to Los Angeles. Democrats condemned the move as a staged spectacle. Attorney General Pam Bondi defended the deployment, while Governor Gavin Newsom warned Angelenos not to take the president's bait.
Donald Trump's government isn't protecting our communities. They're traumatizing our communities. And that seems to be the entire point. Authoritarian regimes begin by targeting people who are least able to defend themselves, but they do not stop there. Trump and his loyalists, they thrive on division because it allows them to take more power and exert even more control.
In June, Reporters Without Borders reported dozens of journalists were injured while covering the LA protests, raising concerns that law enforcement were deliberately targeting reporters. California Senator Alex Padilla was also forcibly removed from a press conference while attempting to question Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem.
I'm Senator Alex Padilla. I have questions for the secretary because the fact of the matter is a half a dozen violent criminals that you're rotating on your heads off.
Internationally, Israel carried out strikes on Iran, raising fears of wider regional war. Diplomats urged de-escalation as the UN Security Council convened an emergency meeting. Trump later announced a ceasefire as Democrats renewed calls to rein in presidential war powers.
President Donald Trump posted a message in his Truth Social website Monday saying, "Congratulations to everyone," and announcing a ceasefire between Iran and Israel. Trump's stand on the Israel-Iran conflict has taken more twists and turns than his tariff policies in a matter of a few days. 2 days after Trump said he would take 2 weeks to decide whether to enter the conflict, the U.S. launched 30,000-pound bunker buster bombs at Iranian nuclear facilities, the first time the weapon had been used in combat. Iran quickly vowed retaliation. Protesters rallied in at least a dozen countries, including demonstrations in New York City and Tokyo.
No, no, on Iran!
The start of July brought crisis in Texas as catastrophic flooding pushed the death toll past 100. The Trump administration responded to criticism over cuts to the National Weather Service by attacking forecasters and media coverage.
The death toll from the deadly floods in Texas has topped 100, and the response is still unfolding. The number of dead reached 104 by news time, including 28 children. Former federal officials and outside experts had warned for months that President Donald Trump's staffing cuts to the National Weather Service could endanger lives. The Trump administration is pushing back against those criticisms.
To any person who has deliberately lied about these facts surrounding this catastrophic event, you should be deeply ashamed.
Carolyn Leavitt is the White House press secretary.
Unfortunately, in the wake of this once-in-a-generation natural disaster, we have seen many falsehoods pushed by Democrats such as Senator Chuck Schumer and some members of the media.
President Donald Trump addressed criticisms as he spoke to reporters on Sunday. One reporter asked whether the DOGE cuts to federal government left key vacancies in the National Weather Service. But Trump was not accepting any blame.
That was really the Biden setup. That was not our setup.
Meanwhile, conditions in Gaza deteriorated further. Palestinians began describing indiscriminate killings at aid distribution sites after Israel forced the United Nations aid program out of Gza. Israel's Haaretz newspaper reported that Israeli officers were shooting food seekers as a form of crowd control. It was later revealed that members of an anti-Islamic U.S. biker gang had been hired to provide security at the deadly sites run by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, an organization backed by Israeli and U.S. authorities to distribute aid amid famine caused by Israel's blockade. The United Nations delivered a grim update. An average of 28 children had been killed each day over the past 2 years. July also saw the first hunger-related deaths. A coalition of nations known as the Hague Group called for sanctions to hold Israel accountable for what they described as a genocide crisis. An Israeli strike hit Gaza's only Catholic church, as more than half of Gaza's housing lay destroyed, and civilians continued to die of hunger or while seeking aid. The escalating humanitarian catastrophe sparked civil disobedience in the streets of San Francisco, at the Boston Consulting Group headquarters and Wells Fargo offices.
I'm Julia. I'm currently standing outside Wells Fargo Bank, blocking the entrance with a lot of other activists. We are standing here because Wells Fargo is funding pipelines and companies that are bombing Gaza. They're responsible for this genocide, and it's important that people know. We're objecting in the only way that we can, by putting our bodies on the line.
Can you talk about what your shirt says?
Yeah, my shirt says, Jews say, let Gaza live. I'm Jewish, and the genocide in Gaza breaks my heart every day. And I think it's important to denounce it in the strongest way possible. No one should be subject to what Israel is doing to them. I know people personally in Gaza and in the West Bank who are afraid for their lives every day, who are watching their children starve. And we're responsible. And they claim they're doing it in our name. I have to say no. Never again for anyone.
Around the corner, there are dozens of police gathered, I'm sure ready to try to break this blockade on Wells Fargo with protesters. Are you worried that you could face violence or arrest?
Absolutely, but it's a price worth paying.
Shockwaves rippled internationally and here in the Bay Area after a deported Palestinian peace activist and filmmaker was killed by an Israeli settler in the occupied West Bank.
The life here is not alive anymore. Honestly, it's not alive. It's just like you are ready for, you know, like something gonna happen and you don't know when.
That was Palestinian peace activist Auda Hatalin speaking to Al Jazeera just one day before he was shot and killed in the occupied West Bank by a known Israeli settler with a history of violence, one who had previously been sanctioned by the United States, until those sanctions were lifted earlier this year by President Donald Trump. Auda was a teacher and community organizer. He was one of the filmmakers behind the Oscar-winning film No Other Land, which documents life under Israeli occupation, filmed in Auda's community where settlers have been trying to occupy, and where he would be killed. Jewish Voice for Peace reported that Israeli settlers entered Auda's village with a bulldozer, attempting to demolish the remaining homes. Witnesses say he and his relatives tried to stop the destruction when a settler opened fire. Auda was shot in the chest and later died from his injuries. Auda was a friend to many in the Bay Area, including Mohammed Sheikh, with the Arab Resource and Organizing Center Action.
The loss of Auda hits close to home for those of us in the Bay. Auda was a beloved human rights defender. He was a teacher who taught English, a writer, and a Palestinian father. He's from Sefer Yatta, an area where both Israeli occupation forces and settlers regularly raid and attack Palestinians, their homes, and their land on a daily basis.
Jewish Voice for Peace says it demands justice for their friend, Auda Hatalin.
We are appalled and extend our sympathy to Auda's family and his entire community. However, I think what's important is that this is one piece of all the terrible things that Israel is doing. You know, from the genocide in Gaza to the ethnic cleansing going on in the occupied West Bank. Israel is out to destroy the Palestinian people. And as Jews, we cannot and will not accept that.
By mid-July, the Jeffrey Epstein scandal had resurfaced with force. Conspiracy theories surrounding Epstein's sex trafficking network of underage children re-entered the political mainstream, haunting the Trump administration. Senate Democrats invoked an obscure procedural law to force the release of the Epstein-related files.
Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? This guy's been talked about for years. You're asking, we have Texas, we have this, we have all of the things. And are people still talking about this guy, this creep? That is unbelievable.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries delivered a record-breaking speech on the House floor, lasting more than 8 hours, delaying the vote on cuts to foreign aid and public broadcasting. In California, a federal immigration raid at a cannabis farm sparked protests and led to more than 200 arrests. In Florida, environmental activists with Friends of the Everglades filed suit over conditions at the so-called Alligator Alcatraz Immigrant Detention Center.
Those of us who cherish the Everglades, which is millions of people in Florida and beyond, did not know this idea, this proposal was coming. In fact, it was such a shock that we wondered if it was a stunt. And as it turns out, it was a stunt, and they were also serious.
You're listening to the Pacifica Evening News special holiday broadcast. This is part two of our 2025 year in review. I'm your host, Lauren Schmidt. By the end of July, National Guard troops withdrew from Los Angeles as a new political battle ignited over redistricting, beginning in Texas.
With midterm elections looming, President Donald Trump asked Texas to find him 5 new congressional seats, and on Wednesday, Texas Republicans unveiled their proposed map to do just that by redrawing congressional districts ahead of the election. Texas Democrats responded with a news conference at the state capitol in Austin. They called the redistricting plan an illegal power grab that would dilute the vote of the state's fast-growing Black and Latino communities. Congressmember Sylvia Garcia of Houston says Republicans are trying to silence the voices of people who need to be heard.
Donald Trump, what I call the felon in the White House, is wanting to stay in power. This is a pure power play. And I can tell you that I am so proud of all these Democrats behind me who are doing what great Texans do, is stand up and fight for Texas. And I can tell you that I, for one, as a Texan, would never ever want a con man from New York telling a Texan what to do. We need to fight back and fight back hard. We must press on.
In response, Texas Democratic lawmakers fled the state to block the scheduled Republican redistricting vote. And California's Governor Gavin Newsom announced a November 4th special election to temporarily redraw California's congressional districts, unveiling what he called the Election Rigging Response Act, aimed at countering Texas's redistricting push. In August, ICE escalated enforcement tactics, using unmarked rental trucks to surprise and round up day laborers in Los Angeles, despite a court order limiting ICE operations. Shortly after demobilizing troops in Los Angeles, Trump moved to take control of Washington, D.C., and deployed the National Guard.
White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt gave an update at her daily press briefing Tuesday.
The president declared a crime emergency in the District of Columbia, federalized the D.C. Police Department, and mobilized the D.C. National Guard to end violent crime in our nation's capital.
Opponents of Trump's action point out that crime in D.C. is at a 30-year low. House Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi said Trump is activating the D.C. National Guard in order to, in her words, distract from his incompetent handling of tariffs, health care, education, and immigration, to name just a few blunders. Democratic Representative Adam Smith of Washington State said Trump wants his own domestic police force.
In mid-August, Israel attacked and killed five journalists, four of them with Al Jazeera. The United Nations called the strike a breach of international humanitarian law. In San Francisco, hundreds gathered to protest the killing of Anas al-Sharif, echoing UN warnings that the attack constituted as a grave breach of international law.
On Sunday, the occupation deliberately targeted Al Jazeera Media's tent at Al Shifa Hospital, assassinating the entire Gaza City crew in a calculated strike to silence Gaza's voice and sever its lifeline from the world. For over 675 days of the genocide, they endured unimaginable conditions to carry Gaza's voices and images to the world. They sacrificed their lives to broadcast the truth, exposing Zionist war crimes of destruction, starvation, and annihilation. And yet Western media failed them, choosing complicity over truth. Western news outlets have censored, distorted, and neglected Gaza's reality, whitewashing Israel's crimes, amplifying racist propaganda to justify mass slaughter.
The UN also reported in August that one in four Gazans now live with a disability caused by war. Meanwhile, Jewish Voice for Peace staged summer sit-ins at the offices of Senators Alex Padilla and Adam Schiff, demanding an end to famine and what they called a genocide in Gaza. A separate report found that Oakland International Airport had become a key logistical hub for shipments of military supplies bound for the Israeli military. As August marked the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, Trump floated the idea of deploying the military to New Orleans. Even as new research highlighted the lasting cultural trauma and gentrification that reshaped the city two decades after the disaster. September began with a major legal setback for the administration. A federal judge ruled that Trump's use of the military in Los Angeles was illegal. And union leaders accused the administration of carrying out the largest union-busting campaign in U.S. history. In San Francisco, Mayor Daniel Lurie was under scrutiny after accepting a donation relocating a high-tech police surveillance unit into a Trump-owned building. California Attorney General Rob Bonta filed suit against a Catholic hospital in Humboldt County for refusing to perform an emergency abortion, and against the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department over inhumane jail conditions. On September 10th, conservative activist Charlie Kirk was assassinated. 2 days later, authorities announced a suspect was in custody. Brooke Kirkner has more.
Speaking before a crowd of 3,000 at Utah Valley University, conservative activist Charlie Kirk kicked off his American comeback tour, seated beneath a pop-up tent emblazoned with his catchphrase, "Prove me wrong." Just minutes into his speaking engagement, Kirk was embroiled in a debate about gun violence. "Do you know how many transgender Americans have been mass shooters over the last 10 years?" asked an audience member. Kirk replied, "Too many." The audience member told Kirk there had been 5, compared to 4,000 cisgender shooters.
"Do you know how many mass shooters there have been in America over the last 10 years?
Counting or not counting gang violence?"
"Great."
A gunman had opened fire, hitting Kirk in the neck with a fatal bullet. 2 hours later, President Trump confirmed Kirk's death on Truth Social. In the 33 hours after the shooting, the FBI detained 3 suspects before ultimately arresting Robinson. Robinson was turned in by his father on Thursday evening, separately from the FBI's investigation. Kirk's messaging resonated with disengaged young men and drew millions of young Americans into Trump's base, and was largely credited for the high levels of youth voter turnout in favor of Trump's re-election. Kirk was staunchly pro-life, pro-Second Amendment, anti-immigration, anti-affirmative action, and against the separation of church and state. In the months before his fatal shooting, he said this at a TPUSA faith conference.
"I think it's worth it. I think it's worth to have a cost of, unfortunately, some gun deaths every single year, so that we can have the Second Amendment to protect our other God-given rights. That is a prudent deal. It is rational."
Answering the question that came just moments before his death, there have been more than 5,000 mass shootings in the United States over the past decade. For KPFA News, I'm Brooke Helena Kirkner.
International tensions also escalated. The United Nations Security Council held an emergency meeting over the Russian drone incursion into Poland. At the General Assembly, the UN also voted overwhelmingly in support of a two-state solution to establish a Palestinian state. UN officials accused Israel of intentionally killing journalists, and a commission of inquiry reported Israel was committing acts of genocide. France formally recognized the Palestinian state, while the US and Israel boycotted the vote. Trump used the General Assembly podium to deliver the longest speech ever by a U.S. president. Trump's teleprompter was reportedly inoperable. However, the president claimed the malfunction was sabotage. His unscripted speech was focused on attacking Europe and dismissing climate change.
"Your countries are going to hell. You need strong borders and traditional energy sources if you are going to be great again."
By the end of September, Donald Trump would summon more than 800 of the nation's top military leaders to an unusual large-scale meeting in Quantico, where the president proposed using American cities as military training grounds.
"America is under invasion from within. We're under invasion from within."
President Donald Trump told the military's top brass and service members summoned from stations around the world that U.S. cities would be good training grounds for them.
"We should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds for our military, National Guard, but military, because we're going into Chicago very soon. That's a big city,
with an incompetent governor. Stupid governor, stupid.
The move will likely set the stage for further legal challenges to the president's use of troops on American soil and in American cities. But not just any city. Trump's targeting Democratic cities in Democratic states.
It seems that the ones that are run by the radical left Democrats, what they've done to San Francisco, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, they're very unsafe places, and we're going to straighten them out one by one.
Trump was joined by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, who also carried the MAGA message, railing against DEI diversity initiatives and declaring an end to woke culture.
And we lost our way. We became the woke department, but not anymore.
October opened with a shutdown as the federal government closed its doors, triggered by disputes over health insurance subsidies. The month also brought the loss of legendary primatologist Jane Goodall, who died at the age of 91. Climate activist Greta Thunberg was arrested after the Israeli Navy intercepted the Global Samud Flotilla, a civilian aid convoy carrying humanitarian supplies to Gaza. Thunberg was among the flotilla's steering committee members. Israeli forces detained activists and deported them to Europe. Participants later alleged mistreatment in custody and denial of medical care.
What were the conditions for you over the last few hours?
They were absolutely nothing compared to what people are going through in Palestine, especially Gaza right now.
In response, more than 2 million people across Italy joined marches and strikes, protesting Israel's interception.
A crowd of 100,000 marched through the streets of Milan, occasionally breaking out in the Italian anti-fascist anthem, Bella Ciao. Simonetta came to the protest with her 15-month-old son, Matteo, in her arms and a handmade sign. Can you tell me what your sign says?
Fate silenzio quando i bambini dormono, non quando muoiono.
Meaning, keep quiet when babies are sleeping, not when they're dying.
Their kids are not less important than our kids.
Italian trade unions and other activists staged protests in more than 100 cities. I'm Eileen Alfandari for KPFA News in Milan, Italy.
Closer to home, Alameda County adopted a new ethical investment policy, with supporters hoping it becomes a model for counties nationwide. October 7th marked 2 years since the Hamas attacks that sparked the Gaza War, now described by international observers as genocide. Days later, a U.S.-brokered ceasefire agreement was reached, opening the door to surge in humanitarian aid. The United Nations urged world leaders to seize the moment to replace occupation with a two-state solution. Around the same time, the White House hosted what it called an Antifa roundtable, attacking the anti-fascist movement as left-wing terrorist organizations.
The epidemic of left-wing violence and Antifa-inspired terror has been escalating for nearly a decade.
The most notable comments from the roundtable came from the Attorney General and the Homeland Security Secretary, who hinted that government actions against individuals who align with Antifa may be forthcoming.
And as you made clear, Antifa is a domestic left-wing terrorist organization. We saw what's happening in Portland and Chicago, and you saw what happened in Dallas. No longer. This is not activism, it's anarchy.
Pam Bondi said she has sent a memo to all federal officers, including the FBI, DEA, and others, to protect ICE from Antifa.
Fighting crime is more than just getting the bad guy off the streets. It's breaking down the organization brick by brick. Just like we did with cartels, we're going to take the same approach, President Trump, with Antifa. Destroy the entire organization from top to bottom.
Meanwhile, the federal government shutdown entered its third week as Trump threatened federal paychecks. Democrats and the Congressional Hispanic Caucus demanded that House Speaker Mike Johnson swear in Congress member-elect Adelita Grijalva, whose vote would later force the release of the Epstein-related files. As the election neared, New York mayoral candidates clashed on the debate stage, with attacks aimed at progressive frontrunner Zohran Mamdani, as former Governor Andrew Cuomo attempted a political comeback.
What the Assemblyman said is he has no experience.
Mamdani, yeah. Want to respond?
And if we have a health pandemic, then why would New Yorkers turn back to the governor who sent seniors to their death in nursing homes? That's the kind of experience that's on offer here today. What I don't have an experience, I make up for an integrity. And what you don't have an integrity, you could never make up for an experience.
Yes.
By the 20th day of the shutdown, an estimated 7 million people participated in No Kings protests nationwide, the largest coordinated protest movement in U.S. history.
Our right to protest is important everywhere, really it is, but there is nowhere that it is more important than here in the capital of the country. We know what authoritarian rulers do. Authoritarians, they try to prevent dissent in the Capitol. They want to control capitals. They have tried to control capitals through the history of time and space, because controlling a capital is a way to control a nation and a way to prevent the transfer of power.
October also marked the beginning of U.S. military strikes on vessels in the Caribbean.
The United States has a long and checkered history of military intervention in Latin America, from the Monroe Doctrine to the Bay of Pigs, the coup against Allende in Chile, and the Contra Wars in Central America. Lately, the ominous signs are coming from around Venezuela, where the Trump administration is ramping up military actions, including attacks on purported drug-running boats off the coast of Venezuela. The latest such strike came Thursday. President Donald Trump confirmed the attack Friday.
In a submarine, right? We attacked a submarine, and that was a drug-carrying submarine built specifically for the transportation of massive amounts of drugs, just so you understand. This was not an innocent group of people. I don't know too many people that have submarines. And that was an attack on a drug-carrying, loaded-up submarine.
The strike left two survivors who were being held on a U.S. Navy vessel. Trump did not offer details, but Secretary of State Marco Rubio promised that will come later.
Yeah, it's well known there's an ongoing narco-terrorist operation the United States has been conducting. As far as details of any recent strikes, we're not prepared here to announce all those details, but you'll get that information here very shortly.
As of this broadcast, that information and proof has yet to arrive. Congressional veterans released a video urging service members not to obey illegal orders. Lawmakers opened an investigation after a U.S. double-tap strike destroyed a boat and then targeted survivors. The family of a Colombian fisherman who was killed in an earlier strike filed a human rights complaint. Jeffrey Korn, director of the Center for Military Law and Policy, said that the legal justification is deeply flawed.
So the administration has claimed that the introduction of illegal narcotics amounts to an armed attack, like Al-Qaeda flying planes into the World Trade Center. The problem with, and therefore we have a right to act in self-defense. The problem with that, the flaw in that, the fundamental flaw, is there's no indication that this group is launching attacks on the United States. There's no question that they're complicit in the introduction of deadly narcotics, but harm does not equate to armed attack. There has to be an intent to inflict that harm, an intent to kill Americans, an intent to destroy American property, to attack American facilities abroad. So this analogy to Al-Qaeda is distorted.
Professor Korn added that there is a crescendo of condemnation, saying that for the first time since he can remember, international law experts are unanimous in opposing the United States approach. This comes as the House voted on a $900 billion defense bill, $8 billion more than Trump had requested for the Pentagon. Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for her role in opposing the Maduro government and advocating for democracy. But the decision quickly sparked controversy. Machado dedicated the prize to Donald Trump as the U.S. amassed warships in the Caribbean amid strikes that have killed over 100. The New York Times noted that the award has raised broader questions about the prize, asking whether a politician calling for military intervention aligns with the meaning of peace. In environmental news, gray wolves continued their comeback in California, returning a century after being wiped out. And globally, greenhouse gas concentrations reached record highs, fueling concerns about cascading climate tipping points and the planet's long-term health. In November, world leaders gathered in Brazil for the COP30 climate summit, where UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the time for promises had passed, declaring, quote, no more greenwashing. California sent its own delegation to the summit, as the U.S. federal government skipped it entirely. Meanwhile, voters geared up across the country, including in California, for general elections. Donald Trump deployed federal election observers in California, drawing accusations of intimidation. Despite those concerns, Proposition 50 passed overwhelmingly. Democrats scored a sweeping victory in the first general election since Trump's return to office, including the election of a Democratic socialist in New York, delivering a sharp rebuke to Trump and GOP policies.
We sent a message to the whole world that in 2025, Virginia chose pragmatism over partisanship.
In New Jersey, Democrat Mikey Sherrill scored a decisive victory, flipping at least five Trump-voting counties back to the Democrats.
They always say we're loud, but man, with this vote, you guys just scream from the rooftops.
But the most watched race of the night was the mayoral race in New York City, where voter turnout topped 1 million, the highest since the late 1960s. Voters elected Zohran Mamdani, the city's first Muslim, South Asian, and Democratic Socialist mayor.
But as Eugene Debs once said, I can see the dawn of a better day for humanity.
Despite Donald Trump making threats to cut funding to New York if Mamdani won the election, in his victory speech, he addressed the president directly.
If anyone can show a nation betrayed by Donald Trump how to defeat him, it is the city that gave rise to him.
A few weeks later, Mamdani and Trump would meet at the White House. Their exchange shocked the nation.
Your comment calling the president a fascist, and your answer was, both President Trump and I have been clear about our positions and our views. Mm-hmm. Are you affirming that you think President Trump is a fascist?
I've spoken about...
That's okay. You can just say yes. Okay. It's easier. It's easier than explaining it. I don't mind.
In the Bay Area, advocates challenged ICE courthouse arrests and conditions inside immigration holding cells after a report cited abuse, a legal fight that would ultimately succeed. Catholic bishops issued a rare public statement condemning ICE enforcement practices. And in response, Border Czar Tom Homan said the Catholic Church was wrong. In Gaza, as displaced Palestinians returned home, they encountered 71,000 tons of unexploded ordnance buried in the rubble, killing and injuring civilians, including children. Flooding also killed over a dozen people and put nearly 800,000 Palestinians at risk as Israel continued to block shelter supplies. Back in the East Bay, legendary football coach John Beam was killed in Oakland's second fatal shooting of that week. Beam was shot at Laney College, and police credited the quick arrest of a suspect to automated license plate readers, a development that fueled debate over Oakland's expanding surveillance contract. On the national stage in November, Trump welcomed the first visit by the Saudi crown prince since the 2018 murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. Human rights advocates condemned the warm reception, including Dawn, the nonprofit organization that promotes democracy, the rule of law, and human rights for all in the Middle East, founded by the late Khashoggi. Spokesperson Raed Jarar.
We are appalled that President Trump is defending Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, trying to claim that MBS did not have a role in the killing of our founder. This is not true, and it goes against the assessments of the U.S. own intelligence. So this is a sign of President Trump yet again protecting dictators and abusive regimes in the region because of other calculations that he has regarding selling weapons or some personal interests that he has in the region. Implications are very stark. The implications are very negative, whether it's for the Middle East or for the rest of the world. Governments around the world can see that the United States does not care about users. The United States does not care about accountability. If they are willing to accommodate President Trump's personal dealings and buy weapons from the United States and continue to support President Trump personally, that they can get away with murder, literally.
Towards the end of 2025, the Trump administration proposed new offshore oil drilling off the coasts of California and Florida, the first such plan in decades. The UN renewed its urgent warnings on the climate crisis as a fire damaged multiple COP30 buildings, disrupting negotiations. In December, the U.S. also seized an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela amid the controversial campaign of maritime strikes. Meanwhile, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene publicly broke with Trump in a social media post. 6 days later, she announced she would resign from Congress, a year before her term ends.
Standing up for American women who were raped at 14 years old, trafficked and used by rich, powerful men, should not result in me being called a traitor and threatened by the President of the United States, whom I fought for. It has been unfair and wrong, not only to me, but especially to my family, but it's been wrong to my district as well. It's all so absurd and completely unserious. I refuse to be a battered wife, hoping it all goes away and gets better. If I am cast aside by the president and the MAGA political machine and replaced by neocons, big pharma, big tech, military-industrial war complex, foreign leaders, and the elite donor class that can never, ever relate to real Americans, then many common Americans have been cast aside and replaced as well.
In mid-December, faith-based protesters shut down ICE's regional headquarters in San Francisco. More than 40 were arrested.
If you come for them, you'll have to go through us. We're called to protect our neighbors.
On December 17th, the House passed a health care bill without the Affordable Care Act subsidies, as four Republicans broke rank. Trump followed with an unusual Oval Office address claiming an economic turnaround, even as polls showed widespread public frustration.
Good evening, America. 11 months ago, I inherited a mess, and I'm fixing it.
In a move that critics compared to McCarthy-era witch hunts, the Department of Justice announced cash rewards for tips identifying so-called leftist domestic terrorists, targeting immigrant rights and transgender advocates.
A directive by Attorney General Pam Bondi will offer the public money for turning in a broad swath of leftists to the FBI to investigate. Critics are calling it a bounty. It's part of enacting President Donald Trump's executive order declaring Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. Bondi's December 4th memo is far-reaching. It targets immigrant and trans rights advocates, replacing white supremacists that were once considered the top domestic threat. It says these domestic terrorists are engaged in violence or threats of violence, including opposition to law and immigration enforcement, extreme views in favor of mass migration and open borders, adherence to radical gender ideology, anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism, anti-Christianity, and those who express hostility towards traditional views on family, religion, and morality. It mentions the Antifa Handbook, whose author fled to Europe after being doxxed by right-wing groups and receiving death threats in the United States. The memo comes as a new report by the UK's Guardian, citing internal FBI documents, finding domestic terrorism investigations into immigrant rights groups in at least 23 regions across the United States. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
The UN Security Council held an urgent meeting on escalating U.S.-Venezuela tensions, warning dialogue was the only path to peace. By the final week of December, the United States had carried out its 30th maritime strike, bringing the reported death toll to at least 107, with unconfirmed reports of a CIA-linked land strike on a dock facility. The final week of 2025 also brought a powerful holiday storm, triggering flash flood warnings across California. The Department of Justice released thousands more Epstein-related files as lawmakers said transparency laws were still not being met.
According to Representative Khanna, only a tiny percentage of documents have been released so far.
To put in context, there are 300 gigabytes of documents. They've released 2.5 gigabytes. So when people say ongoing investigations, could it prevent some documents from being released? Maxwell, could it prevent some documents from being released? Maybe, but we're talking about 5%. Where are the other 95% of the documents? Where are the documents the three federal judges have ordered released without significant redaction? So the concern here is, what are they hiding and who are they protecting?
Tuesday's release included several hundred mentions of President Donald Trump, including an email from January 2020, saying that Trump was listed on a passenger aboard Epstein's private jet on at least eight flights between 1993 and 1996, which an assistant U.S. attorney from the Southern District of New York wrote was, quote, many more times than previously has been reported or that we were aware. Another email, sent to a member of the FBI's Crime Against Children and Human Trafficking Unit in 2019, alleges that there were 10 co-conspirators involved in Epstein's crimes. The message detailed the FBI's effort to serve the unnamed alleged co-conspirators with subpoenas, saying six had been successfully served while four remained outstanding, despite attempts having been made. The email mentioned that the co-conspirators were based mainly in New York and Florida. In a statement issued December 22nd, Representative Khanna and Kentucky Republican Congressman Thomas Massie, the co-authors of the Transparency Act, said they are bringing inherent contempt charges against Attorney General Pam Bondi.
And I think the most expeditious way to get justice for these victims is to bring inherent contempt against Pam Bondi. And that doesn't require going through the courts. And basically, Ro Khanna and I are talking about and drafting that right now.
Representative Khanna said the DOJ's failure to comply with the Epstein Files Transparency Act constituted an obstruction of justice. The charges could result in a $5,000 a day fine for Bondi after a 30-day grace period. For KPFA, I'm Jacques Labarger-Martel.
And just before the start of the new year, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky floated a demilitarized Donbas as a possible path towards ending the war. And a federal judge blocked the Trump administration from revoking the security clearance of a prominent Washington attorney who represents whistleblowers, Mark Zaid.
It's a round of applause for the Constitution and the rule of law, that there is a branch of government that is ensuring that we don't have a king, that we have a democracy, that different branches have different roles to play. And this is very much sort of as a sentiment to Dick the Butcher, who many people don't know the character's name. It was a character in Shakespeare's Henry VI, but they know what Dick the Butcher said, which is, let's kill all the lawyers. And while that's been looked at in most of our lifetimes, has been interpreted as a negative comment towards lawyers, it was actually a compliment. Lawyers were in the way of an authoritarian rogue who wanted to overthrow the king. And so Dick the Butcher needed to kill all the lawyers to get us out of the way of standing for the rule of law. And this administration has been doing just that, right? Obviously not trying to kill us in the formal sense, but trying to eliminate and undermine our ability to represent our clients. And this decision now is saying that that's simply not going to be acceptable.
That concludes part two of the KPFA News Year in Review for 2025. If you missed part one or want to listen to part two again, you can tune in to our archives anytime at kpfa.org. These stories you heard tonight are just some of the moments that defined a year of upheaval, resistance, loss, and resilience. Told by the KPFA News reporters who showed up, asked hard questions, and centered the voices most often left out. From all of us at KPFA News, thank you for listening and for supporting independent, listener-sponsored journalism. I'm Lauren Schmidt. Happy New Year.